pleased to bring you our feature presentation.
From the place where we're our New Year's resolutions come true to the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey there, money nerds. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And in 2017, a New Year's resolution to stop using, verbs. I just used one there. Verbs have so many problems for me. Whenever Joe's mom starts down my neck, if I stop them, I'll the poster child of this basement. So far, it's really fantastic. And to celebrate, I even Ethel down at the Sizzler. That was really fun. Heck, I even Joe's mom. It a great day. On today's show, to help us the budget in order, please help Joe and OG, Greg and Holly Johnson. We also in with Buzz Index's boss, Jamie Wise, for an update. Oh, I think that was one. On social media and your stocks. We, the Haven Lifeline, I, all over my trivia, and much more. And here they, two guys who, all over this podcast, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
Well, that couldn't have been more annoying.
I wonder if Doug really recognizes that there were still lots of verbs in that paragraph.
Don't even get him started. There's no way.
Maybe he can take out pronouns next.
Hey, everybody. I am Joe Selsey. Hi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And you know what's funny? I was listening last week on Wednesday. Happy Monday, by the way, OG. I was listening to Wednesday's show, and I forgot to introduce you. I introduced me. I didn't introduce you. Sitting across the card table from me wearing his baseball cap. It's the one and only other guy, or so we call him OG.
I do have the cap on backwards today, don't I?
You do.
Is that kind of cool? Is that cool because it's got the little logo right there? Am I a cool kid?
You know what you're celebrating, OG? You're celebrating the fact that we got a fantastic episode today, as Doug so eloquently mentioned, that Greg and Holly Johnson have a new book. If you remember, they were on back in August talking about how they survived a timeshare sales pitch.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's not what they do full time. They have a great website called Club Thrifty, and they are back because they have a brand new book talking about budgeting. And I said, if we could steal some of those for our audience, that's great. So they've agreed to give up some of them for
some
us.
Some books or some ideas?
Some ideas.
Oh, okay.
And something else that we're giving up today, we're telling you how to consolidate your debts. You know where you go? You head to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. Because when you head to Magnify Money, you'll find that they help you comparison shop over 92%, according to a recent Reddit user. Over 92% of all of the financial products out there, if it's consolidation loans, student loans, marketplace lending, checking accounts, savings accounts, you name it, they got it. StackingBenjamins.com/magnified money. And as you know, OG, what I really like about Magnified Money, you go there, you don't got to give them anything about you until you're ready to play ball. You can go search all day, just like you're at a store. You know, the person walks up and they say, "Can I help you with something?" You're like, "Nope, I'm just looking."
It's like if you're wearing a ski mask and you're at the bank and you're looking at all their banking products, you're anonymous.
Totally anonymous.
Can I help you, sir? Nope. Just here to look.
Just here to look with my big old violin case.
Sir, could you take your hands out of your pockets? No, they're very cold. Could you tell me about your home equity lines of credit, please?
That is so bad.
I'm being anonymous.
We are leaving Cambodia. And, you know, by this time,
this is a story. Okay.
Yes. By this time,
we're not currently leaving Cambodia.
No. Sometimes it feels like it. However, we're leaving Cambodia and we're in line. And some of the signage in these places are hilarious, but we're in the security line and it says in big letters, like, you know, you can't have scissors, you can't have whatever. And it says no bombs.
And, obviously.
And my son, but you never just see no bombs. Like, oh, terrorism.
Ah, dang it.
My jihad has ended prematurely because the sign said, I can't take this on the plane. So Nick starts laughing because he sees it first, my son, Nick. And he turns to my daughter and says in a really loud voice, he goes, Autumn, you forgot to pack the bombs? And I'm like, shut the hell. What are you doing? I'm in Cambodia. That's, Bodie.
That's when you like walk away and go in a different line. On yours, kids. You're adults. Good luck.
I am so sorry you have to stay here.
But we'll send an embassy request to get you released.
Holy cow. I couldn't believe he said that. I mean, he realized the signage was funny.
Didn't Sounds like my baby powder joke in Jamaica.
Yeah, not good.
Sir, what is this?
I swear it's baby powder.
And then I'll snort it. It's fine. See, I'm normal.
Got white stuff all over your face. I got to get through this. Also, head to stackingbenjamins.com/SOFI when you're refinancing those student loans. You know why? Because they are the leader. I talked previously. That's briefly and previously put together. OG.
I don't know if you know.
Previously about marketplace lending and about how at Magnify Money, SoFi is number one. Here's what you do. You head to stackybenjamins.com/SOFI when you're refinancing those student loans. Why wouldn't you refinance your student loans? There's a few reasons why you wouldn't, specifically if you're eligible for some government programs out there. But if you're the average person, there's no reason not to. Get the interest rates down, more money devoted then to paying off your student loans and toward your real goals, less money going to the man. stackybenjamins.com/SOFI. SoFi has a great piece on their blog last week about three different people who took out personal loans to consolidate their debt through SoFi. And it was interesting because they have three completely different reasons why they did it, but also three very good reasons. stackybenjamins.com/SOFI. Get $100 if you use our link. So you don't just want to go there. You want to use our link to get there. All right. As I mentioned, great show today. We not only have Greg and Holly Johnson on, we also have Jamie Wise from Buzz Indexes coming back down, OG, to talk about this whole cool thing about social media and about how social media, tracking social media, how indexes like Jamie's are doing something completely different by tracking how investors do and then allowing people to invest that way. So all that and more. So let's get rolling.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Big news last week. This came out about 9 days late, and I'll explain what I mean there. This is according to MSN.com, but pretty much every place. This particular article written by Brian Womack over at Bloomberg. Yahoo to cut board after sale to Verizon and a name change. Yahoo Chief Executive Officer Marissa Mayer is among six directors who plan to leave the board of the investment company that will be left after the closing of the proposed sale of Yahoo's main internet properties to Verizon Communications. The new company, a shareholder in Alibaba Group Holding and Yahoo Japan, is going to change its name to Altaba and reduce its board to five members as it looks ahead to its next chapter with fewer ties to the iconic brand, according to a filing last Monday. So two things going on here. The first one is we had our Magic 8 Ball, which, as you know, was losing 4-0. In other words, every year for people, if this is your first episode, we have this Magic 8 Ball episode that we did Friday before last, where our roundtablers make predictions, and we use Len Penzo's trusty Magic 8 Ball. The first couple of years, the 8 Ball predicted very, very well whether things were going to go well or not. And got off to a slow start, missed the first four. But the very first question it was asked was, will Marissa Mayer survive the year? And the answer that the 8-Ball gave was no. And Marissa...
The 8-Ball don't lie.
Well, the 8-Ball did lie. The 8-Ball missed it by 9 days. Now, our friend Deanna in the Green Room Facebook...
Oh, it was last year's.
Yes.
I see. Okay, it was last year's. Okay. I thought you were saying that this year's 8-Ball...
No. The eight ball predicted Donald Trump would be president a year early, but couldn't predict Marissa Mayer, but came close though. And as our friend Deanna in the Facebook Green Room, closed Facebook group said, she said, you know, these things are usually in the works for a long time. So Marissa probably knew before the end of the year. So the 8-Ball was probably right. And I'm like, stop making excuses for Len's 8-Ball.
It didn't make it.
It didn't
be okay with the, it's
that's
a loss.
Right. It's not like, the 8-Ball's not going to get a participation medal anyway. So we're going to give it a participation medal.
Not on my watch.
Because everybody gets one. We're all winners here.
Ooh, sir.
At the Stacky Benjamin Show.
Nope, there are some losers.
I have a bigger question. Definitely. I have a bigger question here, OG, which is a lot of people listening to the show have individual stocks and maybe they haven't been a shareholder in a company where it was acquired by another company. Yahoo is a public company. Now it's going to be a different company. Is there anything that you should keep? Is there anything you should know? Is there anything that when your company gets acquired, you should do?
Well, a lot of it depends on the terms of the of the sale. The reality is that by the time the news hits the wire or the news cycle of this thing is happening, it's already priced into the stock. So whether it's a good sale that you're going to be profit from, or whether it's a bad sale that you're going to lose money on, that's immaterial because that's already priced into it almost immediately. I don't know the terms of the Yahoo deal because I didn't look it up, but usually what happens is they say, we're going to buy this company for, you know, X dollars per share plus $1.50 in cash, or, you know, whatever their terms are. That X dollars per share usually represents an improvement from the current price. Well, what do you think happens to the current price the second that that news hits the wire? Well, it trades almost exactly like that sale price, almost right to it, right to the penny. And so there's not a lot of arbitrage type of opportunities there, unless, of course, you knew that this was happening in advance, which makes you an insider. And so, you know, you can't profit on that anyway. But at the end of the day, once that's announced, now you just have to decide, do I want to keep my investment in the new company based on, you know, the fundamentals of the new company, regardless of what the situation is with the old company?
Yeah.
So you do another analysis on that stock and is this something I want to keep now? It's a whole new thing.
Whole new analysis. Yep. You know, you talked about you don't know the terms of the deal because you didn't look it up. Look up those terms of the deal. See how many shares you got for shares, you know, for shares that exchange. Because even though there's a lot of websites that will do that for you, I have to tell you, going back in the past, it used to be a pain. It might not be as hard now as it used to be. But man, sometimes getting cost basis information was very difficult. If a company's been acquired like 3 or 4 times and you're trying to sort out what they first bought, make sure that you've recorded what you bought the original stock at. And then number two, just the terms of this deal, and stick it away in a folder somewhere where when you're ready to sell, you've got that information ready.
That's great advice because you're right. If this happens a couple more times, or now there's what's likely to happen if they were sold to an investment group, is they're going to trim it down, they're going to shape it up, and then they're going to
spin it off
back into another IPO. And now you get X number of shares for that. All of this should happen pretty seamlessly. I had a stock that was acquired earlier or in kind of the middle of last year, but I actually had to send in a form to get my cash. It was a cash deal. So they said, we're not going to put it in your brokerage account. You have to actually send us this form in order to get your cash as a check. And I never did. And then they sent another letter and another letter. And finally, I got the last one that said, if you don't do it, we're not going to send you any money.
Forfeit.
So I, as a matter of fact, just got the check sitting right here. Look at that.
Look at, what are you going to do with all that money?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Don't show that to mom.
No, she's going to make me put, you know, 20% in your savings account and give away 10%. And then I'm going to be left with $8.
Well, she'll have you give 10% to her, right?
Well, I mean, there's the house VIG. Everybody knows that.
And but, yeah. Next thing you know, she's down at the liquor store again. And our second headline of the day, we're going back to the power of crowds. We're really excited to have Buzz Index's Jamie Wise here with us. Welcome back, man.
Hey, Joe, how are you? It's good to be here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, big guy. You have a great New Year's.
We sure did. Yeah, it was a nice little bit of a break, but markets don't stop and neither do we.
Well, let's talk about the power of crowds because, as you know, this has been a fascination of mine since before you and I started talking in August. About maybe a year and a half ago, I first heard about this concept of tracking what people are talking about online, not through surveys, but what people are voluntarily giving. And people like you, Jamie, you're a fly on the wall listening. And clearly in December, it worked again. Let's go through the numbers. While the S&P 500 did 1.82% in December, the Momentum Index, which the Buzz Index and others like it compete most closely against, did 0.58. You guys did 2.13, beating both of them. So I think we've been talking since August. I think there's been 1 month, which was around the election, where everything was uncertain, where you guys took a turn backwards. But other than that, you guys have been like just on fire. What's going on?
Yeah, you know, I think the crowd and the collective discussion online, people are still able to, you know, think through the short-term volatility of the election or the uncertainty around the election and really stick with those companies that they believe have the best long-term prospects. And we're seeing it play out. So, you know, which companies and which sectors will lead this economy going forward? will be able to deliver better profits, better price performance, and the crowd is sticking with those trades because they believe in them over the long term. And I think the performance, or I know the performance we've seen in the last few months, has really shown that, that those companies that are at the leading edge of technology, and whether those are the new types of chip makers focusing on those GPU chips with AMD and NVIDIA, or even the classic tech companies of Google, or more recently, the financials. People are really positive of those sectors to lead our economy going forward. And that is being reflected not only within the sentiment of the community online, but within the performance of those stocks.
Well, I want to talk to you about two things today, Jamie, because longtime listeners know we don't talk politics on the show, but we've got an issue, which is that politics are intersecting with what you guys do by tracking places like Twitter, and new president-elect Donald Trump has been very active on Twitter lately. And have you seen, as he talks about some of these public companies, have you seen any of that discussion affect those individual stocks?
Yeah, I think it was at the beginning. I think the best thing that we're seeing with discussion around stocks online and our tweeter in chief getting involved in that discussion is that it's just encouraging people to think about things a little deeper. It's encouraging people to think not only about the companies he's mentioning, but, you know, his policies more broadly. And because there's so many, you know, questions about what he will actually do when he takes office, it's great to have that social media forum where people can get online and really try and make sense of it all and make sense of it within their own investment portfolios and think about which stocks will really deliver for the long term without getting caught up in the individual tweets about one or two specific companies that he may happen to mention, you know, during his Twitter tirades, let's call them.
But looking at individual companies, I know lately he's looked at the auto companies. Have you seen any bumps in those stocks? Like, is him talking about like some of these import tariffs, has that driven down prices?
It hasn't. And I think we have an understanding of why that might be happening. You know, we think about this concept of, even though he is the president-elect, he does have some kind of diminishing return of influence. When you do something over and over and over again, people think about it a little bit differently. And we saw this early on when people like Carl Icahn were using Twitter as a platform to talk about Apple. And that certainly had an effect in Apple stock when he first started tweeting about the company. But the more he tweeted about Apple, the more people sort of looked through those tweets and said, you know what? He is just one voice and doesn't necessarily represent the final answer on the fate of that company. And therefore, his tweets had less and less impact on that stock overall. I think the same thing is happening with Trump a little bit when, you know, now that he's talking about General Motors and plants in Mexico, he's talked about companies for so long now online that it's not a shock to people. People recognize that GM is a far bigger company than just one single plant in Mexico, and they don't react negatively when Trump threatens an import duty on General Motors. In fact, when he most recently tweeted about them, I guess it was last week, the stock was actually up on the day. So I think what that's doing is it focuses the conversation potentially on General Motors that day. But I think most people are talking about General Motors still positively from the perspective of, hey, this is a good company. It's cheap. It's trading at a really low PE. It's paying a good dividend. It's something we want to hold in our portfolio. And one plant in Mexico is not going to derail the overall positive story around what General Motors has done over the last couple of years. And so they stay positive on the stock.
Yeah, it's a little bit of the boy who cried wolf then. You cried over and over and people just go, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely happening. And I think because that engages people to talk about stocks and sectors, you know, we see the biggest impact in maybe the change of tone or the change of sentiment around names that he's not talking about. And that's really interesting. So financials is a great example there where, you know, pre-Donald Trump in October, financials were only 1.5% of the Buzz Index. Since then, people have continued to stay positive on that sector because they view his policies without him tweeting about certain or specific financial stocks as positive for that sector. So we now have financials as a 7% weighting in our index. The price performance of those stocks has been terrific, and we haven't needed the president-elect to talk about them specifically. People can just see by his actions, by his conversations generally around corporate America and banks and who he's sort of putting into the post, his key cabinet position posts, that they're going to be supportive of financial stocks going forward. People are talking about that without having to be prompted to talk about that. And that's a big thing
we're running a little long, but I've got to ask you one question that I think a lot of people are screaming at their radio right now that people want me to ask you, which is obviously concepts like yours, Jamie, work really well with an upmarket, right? Looking at the hot stuff people are talking about. But sometimes it seems like the quote hot stuff is the stuff that goes down quicker. I know, just because I know you, that you must have done some back testing here and you must have done some work to see, okay, what happens when the stock market goes down? How does the wisdom of crowds help us avoid a huge slip and all these nice gains that you've had?
Yeah, and I think that's because the wisdom of the crowd and the collective view of the crowd doesn't only focus on those high-flying, high beta, to use a finance term there, stocks, right? If it was an index of high beta only stocks, you'd expect it to do better on the upside and worse on the downside. But because we have this collection of value stocks in the portfolio, people talk positively about value names, names like Bank of America, which still on a multiple basis is cheap, or names like Ford and GM and Boeing that aren't necessarily high-flying price momentum type names. Those value names really should hold up on the way down as well. So we would expect that the index overall outperforms on the upside and outperforms on the downside. And even with the volatility that we've seen over the last couple of months, we've seen that outperformance. We think the crowd does a great job at identifying future leaders and future innovators like the AMD and NVIDIA's, where it was early in holding positions in those names, but also taking a common sense approach, knowing that you need a balanced portfolio. You need some price momentum names. You need some high growth companies, but you also want some value names in your portfolio that can cushion some of those volatility spikes.
Well, congratulations on another great month. For if people want more information on the Buzz Index, it's stackybenjamins.com/BUZZ, and it trades under the ticker symbol BUZ. Thanks for hanging out, Jamie.
Thanks. Looking forward to talking soon.
And it's amazing how every time Jamie Wise comes down to the basement, you just seem to magically disappear.
Like why poof, the magic dragon. I don't know.
Why do you always have to use the bathroom the second Jamie shows up?
It's a Pavlovian response. I don't know. That's not the right way to say that either.
Full disclosure, I own shares in the Buzz Index. So I think we have to say that. Whether we do have to say that or not, I do own shares in the Buzz Index. So there's that. So I think our lessons today is, I thought it was interesting what Jamie said. It's even though we don't do politics on the show where politics and money intersect, I agree with Jamie. Interesting in what Trump hasn't tweeted about as much as what he has tweeted about. And when you do anything for a long time, oh, gee, the effect of that isn't as big later as it was at first. Because where, as an example with Boeing at the beginning, you know, like he said, with General Motors, when he talked about General Motors, no effect on the stock. Stock went up. So not that big a deal. But the second thing, I think a big lesson is you got shares that are merging. I like your lesson that Elvis has already left the building. So now you're looking at new criteria.
Absolutely. You need to now kind of go back to the drawing board with that new investment, because it is a new investment, and decide whether or not it fits in your portfolio or what you should do with it next.
Greg and Holly Johnson back in the basement. Normally, we don't have the same guest back this quickly, but they have an awesome new book about your budget, OG. And if there's a great time to think about budgeting, I think it's January. Well, you know, I guess the joke is, when's the right time to start a budget? 5 years ago. If not, how about right now, right?
That's a Chinese proverb. That's yes. One of my favorite ones.
Zero down your debt, reclaim your income, and build a life you'll love. And they're here to share budgeting secrets. So let's say hello to my friends, Greg and Holly Johnson. Greg and Holly Johnson, pull up chairs, guys. How are you?
Hey, doing good.
Fantastic, Joe. How you doing, man?
I'm better now that you're here, especially since, how great is it to see your new book on bookstore shelves?
Pretty awesome. I mean, you know, you write something, you never think it's going to be anywhere, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's out. And you're fantastic. I love it.
I know. So where was the origin for the book? Was it the fact that you thought nobody's really written about zero-sum budgeting, the best topic of all time?
Well, yeah, it was that, but also it's just something that we feel really strongly about. Zero-sum budgeting is the thing that really set us up to become more wealthy and become debt-free, and we just feel really strongly about it.
I love this line from the book. Here's a truth nobody wants to hear. Inside every elderly man or woman is a young person wondering what the hell happened.
That's true.
In the blink of an eye, in the blink of an eye, you go from 25 to 40 to 60 to 79. And boy, what a ride. But once you reach old age, the dreams you had or thought you had begin to die. When you're 82 years old, it's too late to start saving for retirement. With each passing year, the possibilities dwindle. If you wait too long to create the life you want, it'll eventually be too late. When did you guys feel like you were on the wrong train, going the wrong way?
Well, we worked in the funeral industry for a long time before we started becoming financial bloggers. And, you know, we just saw real world scenarios play out all the time. And in the funeral industry, we saw people die without any money. We saw people work their whole lives and die like the day they retired or the day before they retired. We just saw so many sad scenarios, and we kind of looked at ourselves at a certain point and thought, oh my gosh, that could be us one day. What are we going to do differently to make sure we have the life that we want? And that's when we found zero-sum budgeting.
But it also must have been Mary Greg to your own personal situation. Were you not budgeting at all before that, or did you have a budget, but it wasn't a very good one? What was going on in the Johnson family?
You know, we always thought we were really frugal. And I mean, we kind of were. We pinched pennies, but we never really had a plan.
Yeah.
And because we didn't have a plan, our money was just flying out the window. Like we finally started looking at things. We thought, we're making all this money. We're doing great. Why are we not saving anything? So we kind of started digging into our finances and started tracking our spending, especially, and then the zero-sum budget. And what we found is we were spending like $1,000 a month on food. And most of that was from going to restaurants.
Right.
And then we found out that we were, we had these car payments, $400 a month in car payments. I mean, we were making, you're bringing home what, I don't know, $4,000 a month roughly, but we weren't saving anything because, you know, half of it is going out to all these debts and silly things that we didn't even realize we were spending on.
But what's funny for the two of you, it doesn't seem like it was just about reducing expenses. You know, my spouse, Cheryl, says that the word epic is the most overused word in the world. And I totally believe that, right? Everything is epic, or it has to be epic. But it seems like you guys sat down, and epic's not overused here. You guys sat down and said, we don't want to just cut expenses. We want to start doing some epic stuff. Because now, like, I live vicariously through you guys, your Facebook page, and you're going places. You know, you were on a few months ago talking about during a timeshare sales pitch. I mean, you go where's places, you do stuff. So I don't think it's just about pinching pennies anymore.
No, I mean, for us, budgeting, especially zero-sum budgeting, like when it started, it was about relating our income to how much we spent. And I think that's something that budgeting can do for anyone. Like when you're just earning a paycheck and paying your bills, and at the end of the year, you're like, gosh, I didn't save anything. It's like you almost don't know what happened. But when you start budgeting, you start saying like, hey, I'm making $4,000 a month and I'm spending $1,000 of it on car payments. Or, hey, I'm making $4,000 a month and I spent $600 at Panera Bread last month, or whatever it is. So tracking our spending and budgeting for us was just about saying, hey, we earned this amount of money and this is how we want to spend it. And then making intentional decisions.
And, you know, I think people get kind of, when they hear the word budget, they get all nervous inside. Yeah. And they think, man, that's so restrictive, budgeting. I don't want to be on a budget. But for us, the budget actually made things less restrictive. We were more intentional with our money, more conscious about how we were spending it. And that opened up a whole bunch of avenues we didn't even know we had, because we started using our money, the money that we had, more efficiently.
Yeah, because like we would spend all this money at restaurants at like Applebee's and eat like a crappy dinner that wasn't even good. Our kids were crying and throwing stuff on the floor the whole time. And when we started like tracking that spending and creating a budget, we're like, ooh, let's save that money and go on a vacation this year or something. You know, it was about realizing what's really important to us and then allocating our money to those things.
I love how you just kind of casually, you could tell your parents, because you just very casually said, our kids are crying and throwing things on the floor.
Well, you know, it's true.
It is true. It's totally true. I've got two kids. I remember those days. We called our twins the time bombs because we had no idea when the hell they were going to go off. You know,
but you knew they were.
We knew it was going to happen. And sometimes it was in the middle of Applebee's, and that, you know, that took a crappy meal, made it even worse. So I know exactly.
Right.
Yeah. But you guys have been throwing around this term zero sum budgeting, and I'll bet a lot of people listening have no idea what that means. Holly, can you put some measurements on that? What is zero-sum budgeting? How does that work?
Basically, what you're doing is taking the exact amount of money that you earn every month and spending it on paper every month until you get down to zero. And the point is to give every dollar a job, and that includes debt repayment and savings, so that at the end of the month, you have nothing left. Because one thing that we feel really strongly about is if you don't tell where your money to go, it disappears. So basically, by creating a zero-sum budget, you take every dollar that you earn, give it an awesome job, or use it to pay down debt, or you put it in savings or retirement account until there's nothing left. And that way, you're not, you know, stopping at your favorite restaurant twice a week and wasting money that you don't realize because you had to plan for it. And if you want something that's out of the ordinary, that's fine. You just have to put it in your budget.
Got it. So to be clear, what you're saying is when you say give it an awesome job, like a lot of people use Mint, and I think the way you're saying this is different is like Mint is tracking what you already did. This is giving a dollar a job before you even have it.
That's right.
Yeah, right. This is the plan. This is your plan for the month. This isn't, you're not tracking it. It's your plan for the month.
You're not looking back and saying, oh, look what I wasted last month. You're looking ahead to the next month and saying, this is how I'm going to spend my money this month, come hell or high water.
Right. This is what I've got coming up. This is what I've got coming in. Here's where all the money's going to go.
You guys are freelancers, and a lot of people listening to this have uneven income. So there's two very basic questions. I'm sure you know what's coming next, which is let's say that you earn extra. You guys have a fantastic month. What happens to the extra money?
Well, what we do now, because we earn way more than our spending because we're debt-free, is we pay ourselves a salary and then kind of build up a surplus and invest and save that. You can do it that way.
So what that does, just to be clear, I'm sorry, Greg, but just to be clear there, what that does then, Holly, is that it gets rid of the ups and downs, the peaks and valleys, so that you can budget every month. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is like our base core expenses are like $3,000 a month. So I'll only put that much money in our checking account planned out with our zero sum budget. Yeah. I don't leave $6,000 in my checking account so that I can be like, oh, look at all the money I have and go spend it. What I'm saying is I take our bills and create an actionable plan to pay them. And then we build up a surplus with our extra money, if that makes sense.
Got it. And then you decide what to do with that at a later date.
Exactly.
Right. And what I suggest to people who have an up and down income is exactly what you're talking about, Joe. I call it a boom and bust account. You know, you just basically average out the amount of money that you make or you're going to fall short during the year and average that out so you can kind of even out your income on the months that are not as good as you'd like them to be.
Yeah.
Right. So he's talking about keeping an extra account where you have like an emergency fund just for those slow months so you can cover your bills and also set money aside for debt repayment and savings.
But to be clear, it's not your emergency fund. It's a separate account.
Right. No, it's funny because, and this may have happened to you before you did zero sum budgeting, is that people will have, you know, a big check and they'll have steak dinner and then ramen noodles, steak dinner, ramen. And you end up going on this boom bust thing that you're talking about, Greg.
Feast or famine, man. Right. And you don't want to do that. There are ways that you can even things out.
Which brings up then what my second question was, and I think you already answered it. So then when you have bad months where you have too little, that comes out of not the emergency fund, but this slush fund.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Got it. Okay. At the beginning of your book, you put together a list of 10 things. And I thought, we don't have time to go over exactly line item by line item how the budget works and how to solve some of the things. Like you guys solve the problem of debt. You talk about making more money. Like you guys cover this from all different angles. But I'd love to walk briefly through these 10 truths that you have right at the beginning of your book, because I think these are really powerful and people need to hear them. Do you mind reading me number one?
Sure. Our number one truth is that debt is the single biggest obstacle standing between you and the life of your dreams. From our personal experience, that's something we really believe. You know, once we were able to get out of debt, we were able to start chasing our dreams. We had the money and the time to chase those dreams.
What type of debt did you have before you paid it off?
We had a ton of car payments. I think we were paying like $700 a month in car payments at all times or more because we were trading our cars all the time too. And we had student loans, like $20,000 in student loan debt. And then we would have like periodic bursts of credit card debt, but it wasn't like we were just going nuts. Like I would remodel the kitchen floor and put it on the credit card and then we'd pay it off over 6 months.
Which I love, Holly, because you guys talk about this debt like it's absolutely horrible. And the average person listening to this thinks that you had very little debt.
No, we had like 50 or 60,000 at one point. Yeah.
Okay.
Roughly about 50,000.
But you know what I mean? You see so many families that just shrug it off and go, and you're saying that, you know what, that's what's holding you back.
Well, here's the thing. Like you pay those bills, like your car payments, your credit card payments, your student loans, and those might be like $1,500 a month or $1,000 a month. Imagine if you didn't have those bills anymore. What would you do with $1,000 or $1,500 a month? For us, that meant saving for the future, saving for our children's college, paying down our house faster, saving for vacations and traveling the world, and basically creating a life that we want that has nothing to do with constantly repaying other people money.
I think I'd go to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, I just did. And it was, and you know what? I paid in cash and came home with zero bills from that trip.
Just as an aside, Holly, isn't that place just incredibly awesome?
I love it.
I never wanted, before we went to Puerto Rico last year, I never wanted to go. And now I can't wait to go back.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's absolutely beautiful. It's the first time I've been
it's
there.
It's diverse. I like that. There's like mountains and rainforests and beaches. And
next time I go, I want to go to the coffee plantations. Did you make it to one of those?
No.
We didn't this time. Yeah. We did not.
No. Well, we'll go next time together. How about that?
Yeah, there we go. We'll make a little trip out of it.
I did do the world's like tallest and longest zip line at Toro Verde.
Holy cow.
Yeah. I cried the whole time. It was amazing.
Yeah, I think I'd be peeing my pants the whole time. But what's number two on the list?
Two is your paycheck is your most powerful wealth building tool. And I think that's important because most people who make an average family income probably have enough money coming in already to get ahead. They just do not use it efficiently.
And right now, like people, I'm already annoyed. People on Facebook are like, I can't wait to get my tax check. I'm like, stop. You know, like your money, your paycheck is what's going to help you. It's not your stupid tax check.
Right. It is so funny. If you use direct deposit just a little bit creatively, your money can go a lot further.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Good stuff. I think I got time for about three more of these. What's the third one?
Debt is the enemy of income because, when you've got debt, that means every single month you are cutting the power of your paycheck. You're reducing it. So debt is the enemy of your income.
Yeah, because you make less when you owe people.
Which way, and I know that you addressed this, but which way do you like? Do you like that, there's this whole debt avalanche versus debt snowball method, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds on this, but which one do you guys like better?
Anyone that a person is actually doing.
Yep, that's exactly. In the book, we actually mentioned both of them because it doesn't really matter. Just pick one and go with it and do it.
Yeah, amen. Amen. Number four.
Number four is he who has the gold makes the rules. So that's the golden rule. If you owe other people money, you are beholden to them. So you are not making your own rules. You're not living your own life. You're in debt.
And you have to plan your entire life around repaying those bills. They own you.
I think that's the key to this whole thing, isn't it? I mean, and that Greg, gets back to what you said earlier, that having a budget is not slavery, it's freedom.
Absolutely. It just opens everything up. When you don't owe money to people, you can spend that money as you wish.
And then number five, which is one I absolutely love.
When you tell your money what to do, it listens. And when you don't, it disappears. And that's why you need a budget. That's what the zero sum budget is all about. You're looking forward in the month and planning out your spending and your income. That's as simple as it is.
The book is called Zero Down Your Debt. And it's available everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah, you can find it at
Amazon.com, Barnes and Noble, Books A Million. All the major retailers.
All the major book brands.
Just buy it online, though, at Amazon. That's easy.
That's reclaim your income and build a life you love. And by the way, I should mention, too, what's going on at Club Thrifty in the next couple of weeks? Because you guys always have fun stuff going on at your website, clubthrifty.com.
What is going on in the next couple of weeks? I don't know. We scheduled a few.
We just got back from a really long vacation, so we don't even know what's going on.
Me too.
We're talking a lot about, we're talking a lot about debt. We're talking
debt hating.
Debt hating, budgeting. It's January. Everybody's trying to unbury from Christmas. So that's mostly what's going on right now.
Let's put it this way. More of the fun, same fun shenanigans at clubthrifty.com, right?
That's right.
Absolutely. Right. I like that tagline. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah. And if you're driving down the road or you're walking the dog, we'll have a link to the book and to Club Thrifty on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Thanks for hanging out, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Hey, trivia fans, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and new year. I'm, by removing all the verbs, that was probably one, from my sentences. It been a little frustrating, especially when I trying to in the shower, but I survived. Let's see if we keep the ball through the trivia. As you know from Joe and OG's headlines, Yahoo CEO Marissa Mayer down soon. Here, today's question. In what year she hired? That's probably a verb. Oh, man. How can you a trivia question without the verbs? I'll back with your answer and maybe a better resolution in just a moment.
I'm so thankful we have two great sponsors for the Stacking Benjamins podcast. Our first one is Magnify Money. They've been a longtime sponsor of our show, as many of you know. And if you head to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money, like many of you have, you'll know why. And what I love about them is that Nick Clements, the CEO at Magnify Money, tells people that you can use the surfing strategy. You surf down to a 0% interest rate, and then when your interest rate starts to come back up, you surf to a different card. Nick Clements says that's a great strategy, but it also has some pitfalls.
It's painful if you stay around when the promotional period is over, but it's actually really, really easy to move the debt when you're done. So it's more laziness that gets people stuck in the balance transfer than anything else. Banks are betting on laziness.
That's a tagline right there. So whether you're comparing your checking account, savings account, or your credit cards, head to stackingbenjamins.com and surf safely. Don't be lazy. And here's a transition. How about this? First time I heard about SoFi, our other sponsor, was from Nick. Nick, who you just heard from MagnifyMoney.com. And the reason was, he said the SoFi was awesome. So I looked into him, and guess what? Not only were they awesome, they decided to become our sponsor. I asked Dan Macklin how hard the process is when it comes to getting a loan from SoFi.
It's really easy. You go to SoFi.com and apply. It takes about 10 minutes. We ask for a few pieces of information, and then we will approve you or not approve you instantly in the vast majority of cases. So within 10 minutes, you'll know if you have a rate, what that rate is, and we'll show you calculations as to how much money you can save. So that's extremely quick and simple.
Easy process, great people, and Nick at Magnify Money loves them. How great's that? Head to stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi, S-O-F-I, and that'll tell Dan and the team over there at SoFi that we sent you. And if the sponsor ain't happy, ain't nobody happy, right?
Hey there, trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I've decided verbs might not be the miracle I'd first. Sure, I don't have to. How I really didn't mean to that clerk down at the grocery store. I also could have the discussion about the garbage man. Heck, if that nice police officer hadn't about it, I might in jail today. But that, my problem. Here's your trivia. Earlier I asked this question. I think asked is a verb. What year was Marissa Mayer as CEO of Yahoo? Marissa Mayer, who, one of the first names at Google before her CEO tenure at Yahoo, first to the struggling firm Yahoo in 2012. And she, not the only one leaving. That's a verb. Five board members while the company away from the name Yahoo. In the future, I wish I could all the parts of a sentence. I, my own Yahoo. See ya.
Swing and a miss.
Close.
Very, very close.
I was off by 9 days.
Just like the eight ball. You and the eight ball are calibrated the same.
Maybe we operate on a Lunar New Year.
Chinese New Year.
Chinese New Year.
Yeah. What's the chance?
I don't know what that means.
Well, the Chinese New Year doesn't happen until the end of the month here. So you still had some leeway.
Oh, okay. Yes. No, then I was right.
That means. And I'll bet that the eight ball does operate on the Chinese New Year. Because what's the chance that eight ball wasn't made in China?
Yep.
If Len bought that baby at Walmart, I give it a 2-to-1 chance.
2-to-1? Jeez, that's not a very good bet.
I'm saying it's the best bet. It's the odds-on favorite, right?
Well, it depends on what side of the trade you're on, I suppose.
I suppose so. Hey, let's throw out the Haven Lifeline and tackle some of life's, or rather life insurance's, most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they are disrupting the life insurance industry by focusing on those two things you value most, your family and your time. It's why they've created the only affordable term life insurance policy that you can purchase entirely online. And if you qualify, without a medical exam. I still find that amazing.
Where it's great.
It used to take weeks. Now it takes minutes. Head to StackyBenjamins.com/Haven Life now to learn more about life insurance the modern way. StackyBenjamins.com/Haven Life. In today's Haven Lifeline, we're going to throw out to our friend Andrew. Say hello, Andrew.
Hey, Joe. And so as long as I haven't been voted off the island after the whole 8-ball fiasco, you can still ask a question. Here it goes. My father-in-law and sisters-in-law aren't great with money. My question is whether or not there are any liabilities that they might have upon death or something like that, that I would need to protect myself against, since my wife and I may end up being the only ones with a savings account when something like that would happen. Just curious if there's anything that we need to do besides just helping him get some financial things in order to protect ourselves from this. Any advice you have would be great. Thanks.
Oh, thank you to Andrew and the fan club back there.
I like that.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
My kids don't even do that. So,
no, Andrew's kids are much, much better trained than the OG kids. So the OG kids have you trained. Let's tackle that one, because there's probably lots of families out there where family members have bad debt and you're worried that maybe, you know.
Yeah, it's going to fall on your shoulders.
Yeah. What's the story there?
Yeah, nothing. As long as you don't co-sign anything, don't give them your social security number so that they can magically co-sign things for you. That happens from time to time. You have no legal obligation at all.
I would look specifically, I would ask an attorney specifically on each individual issue just to make sure. We should probably get
that nice disclaimer. CYA. I like that.
Yeah, just because we are not attorneys, although we play ones on TV from time to time, made up TV, right after the show. We have the stacking courtroom appearances.
The stacking probate estate.
Right. So boring. Most boring show ever. But they can come after the estate.
Sure.
So let's say here's a question for you. Let's say there's a life insurance policy and Andrew's the beneficiary.
Yep.
Can the creditor go after the proceeds of that life insurance policy?
No, not to my knowledge.
Yeah, because that's not a part of the estate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it'd be like if you have to have an estate sale, for example, and you've got you have to open probate. They don't have a will, or they do have a will or only a will, but not a trust or something like that. You know, you got to sell the car and the gun collection and the furniture and the house. And then there's some money left over. Well, the creditors have and each state's a little different, but the creditors have an opportunity to file a claim against the estate for a period of time. And then they get paid out if there's any money that's in the estate. So, but from a personal liability standpoint, what Andrew's question was is he going to be personally liable for any of it? No, unless he were to do something silly like co-sign an account or something like that.
I've seen instances where, or I haven't seen myself, but I've read about instances where families went in and they started like whatever assets were there and they split them up and they used to pay down their own debt, do their own things with, and that money was now in illiquid places. And the creditors then came after them to get that money back.
Sure. Yeah. You know, that's the value of having a well thought out estate plan, regardless of how big or small your estate is that it helps that process. And the idea of, well, you know, grandma passed away, so we're just going to go up in the house and take all her stuff and let the chips fall where they will. That may not be the best way to do that. There needs to be, you know, one person who's in charge and follows the rules appropriately. And every state's a little bit different on how that works, but there's a well-established way to do that in each state.
Good stuff. If you need us to throw out the Haven Lifeline to you, it's stackingbenjamins.com/voicemail. For more on Haven Life, stackingbenjamins.com/Haven Life. We also get letters down here in the basement. This letter was in direct reaction to a request that I had, OG, which was that I was taking that long flight across the Pacific and I asked people for iPad games. So this is way important financially, way important.
Okay.
What's a good iOS game for my iPad to play?
And Now the question is, did you receive the letter in time to?
I did.
I know we're a little behind on the letters and yes, that sort of jazz.
Well, actually, what's funny is we have totally caught up on the Haven Lifeline and on letters. We are
so
completely,
right in. If you got questions, fill the silo.
Yeah, because I think I protested too much and now the barrel is empty.
I said you wanted to do a letters episode, but apparently we're not doing that.
No, you're not going to have that anytime soon now. because we are very close to caught up.
Okay.
Chris told me to check out Sid Meier's Pirates if I still needed a good iPad game. So I played Pirates. Pirates is this game on your iPad where you choose the time period in the Caribbean and you have this boat and you go and you attack other ships. It was a game that was big like in the 90s that they've redone. Sid Meier, who's a big video game developer, did the game. So I played it. You know the part that I was bad at? When you take over a ship, you have to fight the captain of the other ship. And so then you have to swipe with your finger to either parry or jab or defend. And I'm doing it in panic mode in my seat, you know, 32F.
Next to the restroom.
Oh, I had that.
The blue ooze coming out of the airplane toilet smell.
Six-hour flight, the first flight from Bangkok to Tokyo, the shorter flight, only 6 hours. I had it, but it was from midnight to what ended up being 8 a.m. Tokyo time. So it was the red eye and I'm beat tired and we're the row in front of the toilet and you had enough room to lay.
You just fired the guy who picks your seats.
You had enough room to lay your seat back. And so I laid my seat back and every single time someone went, I would just get to sleep. So bad. I couldn't smell
anything.
And
then you start thinking about like what they're doing in there.
I didn't. I was like, please just stop flushing. So I go to bed. Can you just leave it there? Please just leave it there.
Just leave it. Yeah. As a courtesy, do not flush.
Go in there and put
it. As a courtesy to row 32F.
Yes.
And as a surprise to the next person, don't flush.
So I like this game, Pirates. I ended up playing a lot of another Sid Meier game, Civ Revolution. Played that quite a bit because that game swallows hours, Civilization. So thanks for the everybody who sent me stuff to make those hours go by. I got to say, there's nothing worse than 14 hours on a plane because that 6 hour ride, not that bad. The 14 hour flight that was after that flight, excruciating.
You just didn't drink enough.
That probably was, you know how bad that would have been? It would have been horrible.
No, I don't.
Hey, thanks to everybody. By the way, OG is ready and willing to help you with your financial plan. So if you need help with your financial plan and you want an expert in your corner and you can't find those people, you didn't like that one?
I don't know that I'm at the bottom of the rung of the list of people to go through. I got to be honest, but...
Might be third from the bottom. It was just sitting there right after I said
it. So, I like it.
Anyway,
whatever. You're the boss.
Those people aren't available. Head to stackybenjamins.com/OG and get on his calendar to speak with him electronically. He works with clients all over the United States of America. Thanks to everybody who's also left us reviews for this fine podcast. We appreciate it. And thanks again to everybody for listening. Coming up on Wednesday, CBS business analyst, host of the Jill on Money radio show, also turned into a podcast. People have asked me what my favorite finance podcast is, and I've made no bones about it. Jill on Money, my favorite. And it's a radio show that's turned into a podcast, but I love Jill on Money. Love Jill Schlesinger coming down to the basement, OG. So going to say hello to Jill on Wednesday and join us then. We'll see everybody back here then. Stack of more Benjamins.
So what have we learned today, kids? Well, first, Joe's mom's right. I hate saying that. You can't avoid verbs forever, but you can avoid debt with just a little pre-planning and some good budgeting techniques. Want a great holiday 2017? How about just a balanced budget in 2017? Well, start planning now. Second, invested in companies that are merging? Keeping track of the deal price can save you lots of pain down the road at tax time. While firms will generally help you figure this out, why wait? If you can easily capture the numbers now, do it. You'll thank Uncle Doug down the road. But the biggest lesson of the day? Avoiding verbs in your sentences is a childish, immature overreaction to my problems. From now on, if I have a problem with Joe's mom or these guys in the basement, I'm just going to jump on Twitter. #winning. Special thanks to Greg and Holly Johnson for stopping by today. You can find out more about their new book, Zero Down Your Debt, Reclaim Your Income, and Build a Life You'll Love on Amazon.com or on our show notes page at StackingBenjamins.com. Thanks, too, to Jamie Wise from Buzz Indexes for sharing this month's insights. Find out more about Buzz Indexes at stackingbenjamins.com/buzz. The Buzz Index Exchange Traded Fund trades at ticker symbol BUZ. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. Special thanks to Joe's mom for this delicious canned meat called Fancy Feast. Where did this come from? Also, I love the cats on the label. So adorable. Who thinks of this stuff? Join us on Wednesday because Joe's mom is baking chocolate chip cookies for CBS News business analyst and host of the Jill on Money show, Jill Schlesinger. Oh, that's going to be great.
Welcome to the after show, the part of the show that doesn't exist. What happens in the after show stays in the after show. Do not talk about the after show.
How about my business partner, my other business partner, just saw Fight Club for the first time. And he says, did you see Fight Club? I'm like, I don't know. He's like, it was like Brad Pitt was in it, Edward Norton. I'm like,
I
don't know anything about that. No and then idea. He finally got it.
Yeah.
He finally was like, oh, okay. I see what you're doing.
Between him and I, you got some quick business partners, man.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You guys are slick.
Thank goodness for Kathleen.
So I took the old family roadster in for service. Another extension of my car story here from last week. So I take this one, the old one in, because I want to get it all tuned up so I can get it sold. I told the guy, I know what's wrong. I said, I know it needs a catalytic converter. I know it needs engine mounts. I know it needs a front strut. I need a quote on all that stuff. Also, there's a recall, an open recall on the vehicle. So I said, while you're getting me a quote on that, do that. He says, okay, no problem. And he says, sir, I'm going to have this thing shined up for you. It's going to be vacuumed, spotless when you get it back. I said, okay, cool.
He just promised that by himself.
Yeah. I guess part of their 27-point inspection.
Yeah, but I don't know. I rarely, that's pretty cool. I never have mechanics that say, hey.
I was at a dealership, right? So I get a phone call or a text actually from the guy who is in charge of the used car sales. And he says, hi, OG. I'd like to make an offer. First he says, I'd like you to trade in your old car and I'd like you to buy a new one. I got a great deal for you. And I said, no, I don't need to buy a new one. I'm not in the market, but you can make me an offer on mine. And so this little thing goes back and forth, and I'm pretty sure that we've settled on a number. So we come up with 9,000, and I'm okay with that. And he says, okay, we just need to get you to schedule an appointment. You can meet with the used car manager. And I say, in my text, of course, well, who the heck have I been talking to for the last 2 hours back and forth? Like, I was like, this is the greatest way to negotiate a car sale ever, you know, on text. Well, he was just like a phone jockey or something. I don't know. Anyway, they didn't even know that the car was in the dealership. I said, well, I don't have to schedule an appointment. Can't you just go look at it in the lot? It's sitting out there somewhere, I imagine. So that thing blows up because the guy looks at the wrong car and says, well, you know, you got $4,000 of hail damage. So we're not interested in your vehicle. And I'm like, it doesn't have hail damage. It's brand new, yada, 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 whatever. So anyway, I go pick up my car, walk in there at 6:55, closes at 7. I'm just getting the keys, right? I already got the quote from the guy on the parts and it's too much. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go with the independent guy locally. And so he says, hold on a second there, OG. Yeah, we got a bill. So the bill? Yeah, you know, you get the it's $139 diagnostic fee. so that we could tell you what was wrong with the car. And I said, but I already know what was wrong with the car. I told you what was wrong with the car. So we have this little back and forth, and I'm like, whatever. I don't even want to deal with it. Here's the $139. Where's point me in the direction of the vehicle, right? I want to get home.
Forget it. Not use arguing over.
Yeah, right? It's just, I'm not going to win this one, right? I already know it.
And you'll make more money than that doing something productive.
Yeah, anyway. And I'm peed off, you know, anyway. Get in the car. I walk around the car. It is like somebody took it mud bogging. It is not washed, as was promised. It's not even in the same condition that it was when I dropped it off. So I don't know what they did with it while they had it, but they got it dirtier. I don't know how, but they got it dirty. Inside is not clean. The back tire is flat. So I get in the car. The like lights are flashing, like low tire pressure. I'm like, what in the heck?
How check is the thing. Tire flat?
Great question. Yep. So I just, I can see them shutting the lights off. They're closing. It's 7 o'clock. They're out of there. So I drive to the gas station, but call the service guy up and leave a message. And I say, I know you probably don't care, but I'm terribly disappointed in the whole thing. You know, it cost me $130. You didn't do this. You didn't do this. You didn't do this. And by the way, you gave me the car back with a flat tire. So, you know, and it wasn't a surprise. The guy who drove the car around, it wasn't sitting in the lot and then I turned it on. It was flat. They drove it up to me. So the guy who drove it to me saw that there was a flat tire and chose to like just jump out of the car and run away as opposed to go, oh, sir, let me put some air in that tire for you. So you know how you get those 800 number phone calls on your phone every so often and you go, I'm never going to answer these, right? For whatever reason, the spirit moved me to answer the phone.
And it's the car the firm the car dealer hired for the stupid survey they do.
That's correct. So, you know, I answer the phone. Hello? Hello? Hello, sir. And I'm like, oh, and I always say when that happens, I say, oh, this is going to be a great phone call. It sounds like we know each other already, right? Because you know that they are searching for like what auto dialer picked up. You know, they're trying to figure out what my name is. Hello, Mr. OG. How's it going today? My name is Susan. And I'm like, what can I do for you, Susan? She's like, I represent Stonebriar Chevrolet.
Oh, fantastic. Because like, I just called them.
I go, hot dang. This is going to be a great call. What do you got for me? And she says, well, I just wanted a real quick survey on your recent visit. I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. How would you rate your service with Chris, your service manager? I'm like, do I get a scale or do I just get to pick a number? And she's like excellent, poor. And I said, what's below poor? And she goes, poor is the lowest we have. I said, put poor, but then in the comments, can you write customer said lower than poor? She's like, oh boy. So,
sir, I hear the dryer beeper going off.
Look at the time. My goodness, it's lunch break already. Off we go. So, sorry, Chris. Disappointed.
I don't understand that. I don't understand why car dealerships decide they have to have an adversarial relationship with the customer after they sell them a vehicle.
Yeah, we talked about this. I talked to you about this already, didn't I?
You did. You called me yesterday. Oh, I got halfway through the story. I'm like, you're getting old, dude. You're repeating yourself, but at least you're repeating yourself on the radio. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But at least it was the same story too. I didn't embellish anything the first go around. This is exactly what I told you yesterday, isn't it?
The first story was not a lie. You hadn't gotten the call yet from the survey people.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was yesterday.
So yeah. You hadn't gotten that call yet. So. But it's also amazing that they just don't respond to any of that criticism. You know what I mean?
Well,
when
it comes to service, right? I mean, people talk about this and it's not a joke. It's not a joke. If you're happy, you usually tell one person, I had a great steak. If you're dissatisfied, you tell as many people as you possibly can. Because you just go, you know, how much it would have taken them 5 minutes, not even to run the darn thing through the auto wash. It didn't have to be hand washed, right? Right. He said he's going to wash it. Wash the damn thing. It's not that complicated. You know, or don't say you're not. Just say, hey, we used to do washes. We don't do that anymore. Oh, okay. Right. You know, your car is too old. You're not a valuable enough customer to get a wash. Okay. I mean, whatever. Just don't say it, you know, and then not do it. Right.
You know, there's a fantastic book that's part of the 1 Minute Manager series, the old series.
Yeah.
Called Raving Fans.
Which, I love that book. It's right here somewhere.
It's probably my favorite in the entire series.
Okay.
But in Raving Fans, they say, you know, there's a part of that book. It's just a collection of stories, as you know, OG, about these great organizations and how they work. I remember this grocery store, and this grocery store does all these things phenomenally well. And at the end of that chapter, they're talking about that. And the guy said, you notice we don't bag your groceries? And the woman says, oh, no, I was so taken with everything else you guys do. I didn't notice it. He goes, no, you bag your own groceries. Because the reason is we just can't do everything. We pick the things that we can do. We do them really well so that we make promises, we keep them. And if we can't do it well, he said, too many things were going wrong in bagging groceries. We'd bag them the wrong way. We'd do whatever. And, you know, we found that if you bag your own groceries, you're happier with the way it's done. And if the bag rips, you don't blame us. And you know what I mean? There's all this stuff.
Yeah.
All these things that could go wrong. Like, we don't do any of that. But we do these 15 other things. We do them really well. And the point was, if you make the promise, keep it. Otherwise, just don't make the promise.
Just don't make the promise. Right?
If you don't make the promise, nobody expects anything. So it's funny because right after I read that, I went in, I was on television and I had more hair than I do now. And
that is the funniest picture you have in your entire house, by the way. By the front door. I think it's the one by the front door with you and the family. Maybe it's in your kitchen. It's in the kitchen. It's like in that little nook by your refrigerator or something like that. At least that's where it was. It was like you and the kids when they were young and the family.
And
you have this flowing blonde locks. And I'm like, who is that hot blonde? And I'm not talking about Cheryl.
Who's that dude with your family? You got to get that guy out of your family pictures.
I mean, it was like...
So I had a little more hair, and you knew me when I was on television. I didn't, I still didn't have a lot of hair, and I certainly didn't have hair that you should pay a lot of money to have done, but I couldn't afford to have it wrong, right? I couldn't afford to have it done wrong, so I paid a bunch of money. I went to this place where it was a bunch of supermodels and me. If I told you what I paid to get my stupid hair done, people would go, that's the dumbest thing ever. Until you know, I'm on, at that time, the 10th or 11th biggest, and now it's the 21st biggest city in the United States. I looked at that last week, but it's 10th or 11th biggest city.
Well, it's because you left. Everybody else left. They're like, well, if Joe's not there.
That is. If Joe's not on XYZ, we're taking off, man. But, and I was on the number one news channel to, you know, doing this thing. So I just couldn't afford to have it bad. So I overpaid. But anyway, one time I went in and they offered me a latte and I'm like, that's fantastic. And as I'm waiting, I get a latte and it's great. And the whole process is great. And the next time I came in, the person came out to check on me, checked on me twice and didn't offer me a latte. And I had just read that thing, that raving fans thing. And I'm like, you know, if you offer something as different than a haircut as a latte one time, you got to keep doing it.
You better keep doing it.
Yeah. Because the next time I was pretty disappointed. I got to tell you, at first I was disappointed. I'm like, where's my latte? I sound like such a diva. Come on.
What do you mean? I can't get my latte and have my hair cut at the same time. What kind of place is this?
Jeeves, bring me my latte. And that's when I realized, I'm like, you know what? It's this, whatever you do, man, if you do something cool, it's a promise. Don't promise.
Yeah.
So that's why we never promise anything on the Stacky Benjamin show.
We under promise and over deliver by promising zero.
Promise. If you get one nugget, you're amazed. That's the secret to our success.
Well, that and you.
Yeah, right. All right. We'll see everybody next time. I was going to talk Manchester by the Sea.
We'll do that next time.
Yeah, we'll have to do that Wednesday. Bye-bye.